I'd like to introduce Sarah Islin at this time. And Sarah is president of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts Foundation. Sarah, one of the largest private health philanthropics in Massachusetts, focused on improving access to care and health coverage. Sarah came to the foundation after serving as the commissioner of the Massachusetts Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy, where she managed and monitored critical phases of the implementation of the state's landmark 2006 healthcare reform law, including the formation of the health safety net and the fair share, free rider, and health insurance She also co-chaired the Special Commission on the Healthcare Payment System, which recommended a major overhaul in the way that physicians and hospitals are paid.
But I'm really going to build on what Gil and Dylan beautifully teed up, but I'm really going to do this through the lens of talking about the cost containment conversation in one state, and one state, Massachusetts, where I'm from, but that in many ways you could count, depending on how you count, we're either 4 years ahead of national reform foreshadowing debate or eight. Our law passed in 06, but we started implementing it immediately. So you could say it's four, but in many ways it's really 8 years. And so we are having an intense conversation in our state about costs and what do we do, particularly given that we made an explicit decision in Massachusetts to focus on coverage first. And really tabled the cost containment conversation knowing that we'd get there. And that's exactly the moment that we're in right now and having a really intense conversation so you can see how the themes that you guys talked about play out politically and play out from a policy perspective. It's fun. So I'm going to fly through these slides. I have a lot of them, but they really build on things you already know or that have been beautifully teed up already. So we've had incredible success, lowest uninsurance rate in the country. Highest healthcare spending, sort of dubious distinction of having literally the highest spending per person in the entire world. Because as we've heard earlier, we spend more in the U.S. than anywhere, and we spend more in Massachusetts than anywhere in the U.S. So in some ways, I like to think that we had sort of the best preconditions to tackle coverage. We had a really low uninsurance rate. And so people are looking, there's this sort of tension. People are looking to us to kind of lead by example in the cost containment debate. But I look at this data and I say, okay, we're going to try, but we're actually starting. We probably have some of the worst preconditions to actually tackle healthcare costs because we cost so much more. And we saw this data nationally. If we stay on the path that we're on, we're going to be spending double what we spend per person on healthcare in 10 years that we're spending today. So anytime I have an audience, I do want to make the point that the national media, I think, really get the Massachusetts story wrong. They look at this data that I just showed and said, oh my gosh, health reform has, you know, blown up the state budget. It's driven your healthcare cost problem. And the facts are actually very different. Health reform, our coverage expansions, cost what we expected, and they cost a just really small amount. Both the administration's own analysis and analysis from independent business-financed groups have shown that the marginal cost of our coverage law has been less than 1% of the state budget. And what we expected, and we've managed to sustain it and keep that low uninsured rate despite a recession that's hit our state in the same way it's hit all of yours. But what they often look at is we do see these same spending trends in private premiums and public premiums that everyone else does, and they say, oh, that means your reform laws failed, and we say, no, it doesn't. We didn't try to do anything about that, so how can you criticize us for not tackling something that we didn't even try to tackle, and that's the work that we're doing right now. So as we've heard, addressing costs and the reason why we knew we'd be at this moment and we're working so hard on it is because it's critical to maintaining our success. And that's really on two dimensions. It's both because now we have almost all of our newly insured in public programs, either in Medicaid or our new subsidized insurance program called Commonwealth Care. Before the recession hit, and that's what this chart on the left shows, we actually had a kind of more balanced picture in terms of all of our newly covered being in public programs, sort of a third in Medicaid, a third in subsidized insurance plans, and then the other third were folks who'd taken up employer-sponsored offers of insurance or who'd bought insurance on their own. But when the recession crashed, we've seen, you know, more and more need for these safety net programs. But the point is, we want to keep private insurance within reach, because if it continues to become out of reach, it increases dependence on public programs, which is, you know, rather consuming of public and state budget resources. So we need to address it on the public side. We need to address it on the private side, since they affect each other. And we've already talked about this. When incomes are flat, the more healthcare costs, the more it consumes all of our resources. And we know, research tells us that, and you guys know, sitting here at APHA better than anybody, we actually know that the health of a community is more profoundly affected by things other than healthcare services. It's more profoundly affected by education, by housing. And the more we spend on healthcare, the fewer resources we have for all of those other things, either in terms of public resources or private resources. So where are we? I'm just going to fly through this. In Massachusetts, we have a healthcare system that looks like the picture that was painted nationally by Gill. While we have actually a very, very high quality system, we know even we in Massachusetts can do better. We have high rates of preventable readmissions. We don't do that well on delivering preventive care for people with chronic diseases. We do well relative to other states, but not well relative to how we could be doing. And so all of these things together have really driven this conversation about how do we get this under control, how do we achieve this vision of consistently high-quality, efficient care that's so critical to maintaining our health reform law. So I love this. This was a cartoon from about a year ago in the Boston Globe. So this is right around Thanksgiving when they put extra security in place at airports, which I just thought was perfect, that if somehow in this conversation about interoperable health records, they could just get the TSA to share the results of all of those full body scans with the healthcare delivery system, given what we saw, what a huge consumer technology is of healthcare dollars, I think we'd have the whole thing. We'd have the whole thing nailed. But nevertheless, I think the politics are, this is a New Yorker cartoon from around the same period that's a doctor talking to a patient. In our effort to minimize surgical costs, I'll be hitting you over the head and tearing you open with my bare hands. Thankfully, no one's actually proposing this as a solution. But I do think, to me, it somewhat illustrates that the things that we know save money, and there was a comment earlier about physician salaries, the things that we know work in other countries, which are, you know, more regulated prices, there isn't really a political appetite to do here at the national level or even at the state level. But we're talking about it in Massachusetts. So we've passed two laws, one in 2008 and one in 2010, that created a level of transparency in our state that I really don't think exists, maybe in one other state, but really anywhere else. Created, I'll talk a little bit more about this, a commission on payment reform, a 10-person commission I co-chaired when I was in state government that was charged with saying, okay, everybody's talking about the way we pay being a problem and fee-for-service being a problem. You guys get together and tell us what to do about it. So I'll come back to that. But then created annual, we now have annual hearings, week-long hearings, that are co-chaired by the Attorney General in our state and by a state agency, the state agency I managed, that are spending huge amounts of money and consulting resources to really answer the question of, in our state, what's driving healthcare costs? You know, what are the contributors to increased spending at an incredibly granular level? But there really is a belief, I won't go through this slide, this is a Commonwealth Fund opinion leader slide, that in our state, much as when they asked opinion leaders, what do we think the solutions are, I think there's real consensus that payment reform, while not enough all on its own, has to be a part of the solution. So the Payment Commission, which was part of this law that passed in 2008, met over the course of 2009, the first 6 months of 2009, representatives from insurers, hospitals, physicians, state government, an expert from the Harvard School of Public Health, who was also at the time on the MedPAC board. And as I said, our charge was that everybody was saying, okay, payment reform's got to be a part of the solution, but that's sort of easy to say, and what would you do? What's the alternative that you would propose? And this commission, as I said, with providers on it, the head of the hospital association, the president-elect of our medical society, unanimously recommended moving from the fee-for-service system over 5 years to having every payer, public and private in Massachusetts, start paying under global payment arrangements. And the notion also was that just doing that wasn't enough. There was concern that with moving forward, whether it's with bundled payments, sort of smaller, you know, bundles, or with global payments where you're really articulating a per person, per year payment from a health insurer to a coordinated delivery system, and we used the word ACO, but way back then, before it had all this sort of national meaning, and all we really meant by it was whether it was a traditional integrated delivery system where it's all, you know, everybody owns all the parts and pieces. We said, so we don't really care. We just want providers who are going to come together and agree, whether it's contractually or however it is, that they're going to take responsibility for providing care for all of the care that a particular patient population will need, and they're going to be accountable for it. But so a per person, per year payment. But our worry was, and we're already seeing this in our market, that as a result that we'd see more consolidation of providers. And it's exactly what we've seen since this report came out in 2009. And the worry was, are we going to change the negotiating leverage, the balance between those providers, those hospitals and physicians and insurers, in a way that runs completely counter to our goal to get healthcare costs down? You know, could we actually see those prices go up? And so we actually also in our recommendation said there should be the authority for a new agency or a reconfigured existing agency to actually set goals every year for per person spending on healthcare in Massachusetts. And if those goals weren't met, that there would be an authority within the state that would actually be able to intervene on price, and not price on premiums, but actually price in terms of what health insurers, whether public or private, pay to hospitals, physicians, community health centers, you know, that 90% of the premium dollar that goes from health plans to the system. Because our worry, as I was mentioning in our comments on the panel, was that we've got a lot of really large academic medical centers in Massachusetts. It's not that we need them, we love them, we want them, but we were worried about them doing well at the if we only regulated premiums at the expense of the other part of this parts of the system that we need to. So where does that leave us? At the same time, I mentioned the Attorney General, these cost hearings that happened every year, and this incredible new level of transparency. So we've been having a debate in Massachusetts about not just how we pay, so the methodology, the move from fee-for-service to global payments, but also what, the price part of the equation, and the price from plans to providers. And this is just a little snapshot report from the Attorney General's report in 2010. That started really trying to peel back the layers of the onion about, okay, we know premiums are growing about 10% a year. Why? What are the underlying components that are driving that trend? And what she found, and she's put out a subsequent report and found the same thing, is that when you sort of dissect those into the main components of the price, so how much we pay year over year for the exact same thing, versus are we just getting more stuff, the utilization, or are we getting more expensive stuff? Are we getting more MRIs instead of simple x-rays? And the conclusion of these reports year over year has been that it's actually price that is the main driver of healthcare costs in our state, that we are paying more year over year. It's responsible for more than half of the premium trend, that we're just paying more year over year for the exact same things. So thus, the debate has really been about both what we pay, how we pay, but also what we pay. But that's a pretty, it's a pretty contentious conversation. This is a slide also from the Attorney General report, where she actually looked at the relative prices paid to hospitals and large physician groups in the state, and found there is, once you control for everything you control for, the sickness of the patients they take care of, that there's incredible disparity in price. So across our state, we have different providers. These are just hospitals I put up as a sample, getting paid vastly different amounts for doing the exact same things. And it's not as simple as the academic medical centers getting paid more than the community hospitals. The academic medical centers are sort of tend to be more on the upper end of this. But you can see in orange, those are some of our safety net hospitals. Some of them are up at the high end. So her conclusion was really that at the end of the day, these differences in payments are not driven by quality, by the sickness of their patients, by whether they have more private or public payers, but they're in fact really driven by market leverage. And higher priced hospitals are getting more admissions, and they're getting more money, and really at the expense of lower priced hospitals. So this has really fueled a pretty intense debate about, can the market fix this? Can we rely on the private market to really address these issues? And at the same time, we have all the same dynamics that are happening in every state. This is from a Mass Hospital Association ad campaign saying, Medicaid's underpaying, you know, how can you expect us to change when we're only getting, you know, 60% of costs on the dollar, and Medicare is better, but not that much better. I think their sort of assessment is it's probably closer to 85% in Massachusetts. these days. So our governor, for 15 or 20 years, they've had the authority to regulate health insurance premiums on the books, but it hadn't been used. Well, he started using it. I think it's really been a game changer in the state. We've seen in that market, those employers with under 50 employees, premium increases have slowed from probably upwards of 10% to something more in the range of 6% for the quarters that he's been rejecting rates. But of course, the health insurers are suing, and they've settled privately. But you know, is this going to address those underlying price disparities that I just showed you? I think there's a lot of discussion and concern about, is this enough? So there's a lot going on in terms of cost and affordability in Massachusetts, and I think my conclusion is really that while we have a lot of great data and a lot of great reports, the kind of coalition that we had that really came together to get our coverage law passed, we don't have the same level of support to work on healthcare costs because, exactly as Gil set up at the beginning, someone's costs is someone else's revenue. And the natural allies in this debate are really consumers and employers, but it's incredibly hard to get all those folks engaged in what is inarguably a pretty wonky technical debate. So we just commissioned a poll by our foundation with Bob Linden at the Harvard School of Public Health to really try to, you know, support this conversation with, you know, where is the public on this? How do they feel about this issue? And we just released it in the last 2 weeks. And the conclusion was, when they were consumers, we did a 1,000-person sample in the state, were asked, you know, what do you think are the big issues in healthcare in Massachusetts? Cost rose to the top. Before we did our health reform law, cost was actually at the bottom and coverage was at the top. So we now see that's changed completely. They think it's a major issue. And really interestingly, despite incredible skepticism about government and what government can do, when asked how important do you think it is for state government to take action, almost 90% said they thought it was very important or somewhat important. And I think we were all blown away by actually how many people said it was very important. Normally you add those two bars together to get a kind of compelling view. We didn't have to. So where does that leave us? I'd say kind of, you know, wait and see. More from Massachusetts in the next few years. It is the issue. The governor, this was the report that we released, actually took this report, walked it down to our Statehouse News Bureau and plopped it on the reporter's desk. He filed a bill in February and is waiting for the legislature to file their bills, and he really wants to get moving. So I think you'll be, stay tuned. You'll be hearing a lot more from us as we try to tackle this. And the governor's bill actually called for much, much more government authority over prices, not just insurance prices, but provider prices. So all of our leadership, the governor, the House Speaker, and the Senate President have all said this is their top priority now that they've done in our state pension reform. And looks like we're going to have legalized gambling in Massachusetts, which were higher priorities than healthcare costs for some reason. But now that they've gotten those done, this is it. So I think we're going to have a pretty active debate over the next 6 months. So thank you.
Maybe you have
any questions?
Ask you questions.
Sure.
Let me start off with a comment. I mean, part of the most interesting thing that you laid out right up front is that Massachusetts has the highest cost in the world. Okay. So to what extent the state is kind of seems to be building the consensus towards is to address the problem of cost at the real point of providers as well as plans.
Yep.
Where we're going across the country ultimately.
Yep.
Because we're going to be there as a country, okay, where Massachusetts is now.
Yep.
And so this extent, there's coalitions that are being built across provider groups and sectors, so on and so forth. It's likely a reflection of where California as well as the U.S. as a whole
yep.
is going to be at very shortly.
No, I totally agree, and I think what I'm just intending to foreshadow is, I think it's an incredible opportunity. I think it's also an incredible opportunity for the public health community, actually. So as we're talking about moving to global payments, we're really trying to figure out how do we get more efficient. You know, there is a huge conversation about, and frankly, it is a little bit the elephant in the room, so it sort of gets whispered and behind closed doors, but it's a reallocation of resources. From specialist to primary care, and we're having a conversation about, how do we think about, you know, public health techniques. Our Department of Public Health has been cut by 34% over the last 10 years. So if we really want to get serious about managing care more efficiently and effectively, our foundation just funded for the first time the Mass Public Health Association to support their work in terms of really developing a public health agenda so that when we talk about reallocating, we're thinking strategically about public health opportunities. And so I think it's a great opportunity, but I also think the politics of this are unbelievably hard because the folks who were up at that, when I showed you those that hospital, just the distribution of hospital payments, you know, anybody above the median, why do they want to do this? You know, they're doing really well under the current system, and whether you're bought into the need for change or not, everybody knows change is so hard. It's so much more work to deal with these kinds of changes than to just kind of keep plugging along the way you've been. And for at least half our system, plugging along the way they've been, it's working fine for them, and this sort of crisis feels very theoretical. So that's, I think, where we really are now, is how can we get the coalition we need, get consumers engaged? Frankly, we had to figure out how to talk to consumers about this. I didn't put up a slide that showed when you ask consumers what they think are driving healthcare costs. I think you guys would probably be really disturbed to know the fifth reason on their list was unhealthy behaviors. That was the fifth thing on their list that they thought was driving costs, was just people not kind of doing what they should be doing to take care of their own health. We know that's not what's driving costs. So.
Well,
that's a long answer.
I'm curious that it seems like what we keep doing, at least in my career, in 20 years of showing that we don't have a marketplace that can control costs. Mm-hmm. We've had very little examples over the last 20, 25 years where the marketplace has actually done what competitive marketplaces are supposed to do.
Right.
So I think we've made the case, even if some people politically refuse to accept it, that we don't have a marketplace that will do it. But at the same time, we've had political processes that don't have the ability to tackle this. And I guess what I'm curious about is when I was in school at UCLA 20 years ago, we were told we could never sustain a percent of GDP going into healthcare that we've far surpassed for almost that full 20 years since I've come out. And I guess I'm curious, what do you all think are going to be the economic pressures that are finally going to either break the bank? I mean, because we keep hearing that we're going to break the bank, but we don't seem to be doing it because people are willing, private employers are willing to keep paying more and more for coverage. We believe it's fine to just keep paying more. And so I guess I'm curious, when is it finally going to, because politics doesn't seem to be able to solve it. We've been scared about the economics for 27 years and it hasn't changed the dynamics. So what do you guys see is going to be those tipping points that are finally going to get us some sanity world of healthcare pricing?
Let me comment from California, because I think you have a different look at it, let's say Massachusetts, but and it kind of reflects the debate that that Ann and I have all the time on the issue of single payer, right? And I say, well, I actually believe in single payer, but it's going to happen for at least 10 years, because we haven't had the crisis that we need to generate. And so I think in California, we have an example of a system, the Kaiser system, that has basically, it has 6.2 million lives, covered lives in the state of California. There are state, there are counties in California where 35 to 40% of the people are covered by Kaiser. And it's, as you know, it's physicians get paid a piece, they're part of the system, so on and so forth. So I think ultimately, I think when you talk to a lot of insurers, the people that are at the top of insurance companies, they're thinking about this. I think a lot of them envision getting out of the healthcare business in the next 5 to 10 years, because there's going to be so much heavy state regulation and government regulation that they won't be able to operate and do what their stockholders want, create profit. And already we see in the markets, the health, if you take a look at the stocks of all the big health insurers, they've been losing ground over the last year or two because they're concerned about uncertainty of healthcare reform. So my feeling is that as the crisis gets worse, okay, the big profit insurers are going to begin to get out of the game, if you will. And then we can begin to define things about what is the proper role of profit, what's the proper role of state and federal mandate. But if the crisis has to get worse, and that's why I'm looking at Massachusetts, because in point of fact, all the elements are there for the crisis being much worse earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, I mean, I think that what we need is a deeper level of purchaser outreach, frankly. And so employer engagement, consumer engagement at a level we don't have right now, right? Because it's a really, it's hard to understand. You just might ingredients slower. So how do you engage in a debate about solutions? So I think in reality, what will probably drive it is Medicare financing. So when the federal budget gets so rough that we really start talking about cuts to seniors and entitlement programs, I think that's when this debate's really going to get traction. And I think it's going to happen. I mean, I'm with you. I think it's going to meantime, we have a dynamic in our state where the private market says, hey, we're fixing it, I'm making progress. And, I'm skeptic of it all, as you can tell. So
I think you're seeing it a little bit already. I mean, I think Sarah brought up a very good point where we expect the crisis was supposed to be borne out by the employers that are paying the premiums for the most part. So we have 60% of employers that offer, or 60% of our population gets coverage to their employer, and we've increasingly seen in John Gable's most recent work through Kaiser Family Foundation and Health Research and Educational Trust shows that for firms offering, with over 500 employees, you have a very good chance of getting a 99.9% chance of being offered insurance, and you have a very good chance of being affordable. If you work in a firm that has between 3 and 199 employees, you have probably three times, you are less likely to be offered a high deductible plan, but you're more likely to take it up. So 40% of employees in small firms are buying plans with $1,000, $2,000 deductibles. And so, and they're also paying a larger share of their premium than they used to. So I think as, we've seen this borne out in collective bargaining debates and things like that, once employees get upset enough where they can't pay any more of the premium and employers can't keep passing on the premium to their employees, we might see some change. But then it still comes to those employers making a decision, do we buy insurance? Do we just drop? And if in 2014, we have the individual market, we have more regulation, is it possible for them just to drop everybody and let them go into the individual market? And then we get into Gil's assertion about, well, are insurers going to be happy doing business in that new expanding exchange if employers start getting out of the business of providing insurance and how that looks? And I actually have a more optimistic view in that. I think insurers can make a ton of money in the exchange, and they probably will, because they're getting a new population that isn't filled with pent-up demand and isn't filled with a bunch of sick people. They have 5% of the population that's like that. For the most part, if the mandate holds, the people coming into the pool will be relatively affordable and will probably be a money maker for insurance companies for at least 20 years before they start seeing the negative effects of our kind of strange healthcare system.
Although I think what you may see is some dropping out of the market of frankly people that will all say, great, fine. And we may see more consolidation on the health plan side.
One of the things you might want to watch is a new old governor in Oregon, a guy named John Kibitzer. And he did it for 8 years, similar to Jerry Brown, and now he's back again. And he's a doc. Okay, and I just read a presentation by him, who's actually offered in D.C., about his vision. And he looks at all these issues and says, unsustainable. It's unsustainable, and we have an approach. And you take a look at the work he's doing. And he looked at it, not just in terms of the healthcare thing, but of health, and how the state can reapply itself. And we were looking at his presentation because we were trying to get him together with Jerry Brown. Because we've approached Jerry, and Jerry said, yeah, I'd be interested in doing a one day with Kibitzer. And so far we've found there's very little common ground that Jerry Brown would want to sit down with Kibitzer, because Kibitzer actually has a sense of a big problem, the solution, and Jerry doesn't want to deal with it at all. So, but look at Oregon.
Minnesota's interesting too.
Yes.
In terms of another state that's really moving forward,
Maryland.
Do you like regulation?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have a question about the global bundles defense and just the influence of market share that we're hearing a lot about. How do you think that we can make it so that basically hospitals and insurers are able to see all of that and then you still end up with primary care and public health and effective interventions being undergone even under these?
I'm a former regulator, so. I am personally a believer that I'm not sure the market can rationalize the distribution of payments all by itself. And I think what the government intervention looks like, I think, Massachusetts is a former hospital rate setting state, and I'd be the first to say, and I used to run the former rate setting agency, let's not go back to the way we did it before. It got politicized, didn't really work. We only did in our state hospital inpatient, or big shifted care to outpatient. But I do think that in the same way there's now an environment in which we're talking about premium regulation and rate review for the market before, we need to be having more conversations about the role of regulation. And it could be not to exceed prices. It could just be a provider rate review structure as opposed to having that. But I think that conversation needs to happen because I personally think
wonderful, a couple of wonderful hospitals are part partners, Mass General and Brigham and Women's, and health insurers cannot sell products that don't have those hospitals in them, and that don't have Children's Hospital Boston in them. And I know, because I wouldn't buy it, 3 young kids, I don't want Children's in any product I buy. But what does that do to the negotiation between Children's and anybody else? They know those payers need them more than the other way around. And so how do we rationalize that, just underlying those negotiations to do it? Personally, they can't. But nobody has that authority now. We help you regulate it, with the exception of Maryland. That gets back to how do we get the coalition to have these kinds of honest conversations and talk about where we go from here.
No, I continue to believe that ACA, despite its imperfections, if you will, is going to be a catalyst to have states confront themselves, okay, as to what they need to do next, okay. And even though a lot of states have sat on the sidelines while the Supreme Court process is working itself out, as well as the 2012 election, okay, they will be forced to face it directly come 2013. And so I'm an optimist in that.
Yeah, no, I think there are incredible opportunities in ACA.
I hope. I come from Colorado, and I can tell you that we are a state that has gone through lots of the processes that other places have gone. We've looked to Massachusetts and Oregon and all sorts of places to kind of figure out what we might try. But, you know, we're at a place where the governor just released a budget. We have the most severe on tax and spending limitations in the nation. We have no hope of overturning them. When you talk to the public, they will not overturn them. We are basically going to be the first state to end up with no system of higher education that will receive any state funding. The increases are dramatic at our public colleges because there's no money left. Our budget now is made up about, it's approaching a point where we can't fund Medicaid. Despite costs going up and all of the concerns, we're still a state that is not able to work our way around this. It's surprising to me because we keep talking about, you know, consumer engagement and businesses not being able to compete in the world market, and it doesn't seem to be influencing either the people in the legislature or the individual.